Distin said. The ones on his arms. He got them at the pits, from the rocks on a sheer wall he had to climb to escape. Harmon snorted. That's not how he got them. He killed an Inquisitor while escaping. That's where he got the scars.
I heard he got them fighting one of the monsters that guard the pits, Yulaf said. He reached into its mouth and strangled it from the inside. The teeth scraped his arms.
Distin frowned. How do you strangle someone from the inside? Yulaf shrugged.
That's just what I heard.
The man isn't natural, Rudd muttered. Something happened to him in the pits. Something bad. He wasn't an Allomancer before then, you know. He entered the pits a regular scar, and now... Well, he's a misting for sure, if he's even human anymore. Been out in the mists a lot, that one has. Some say that the real Kelsier is dead, that the thing wearing his face is... something else.
Harmon shook his head.
Now that's just plantation scar foolishness. We've all gone out in the mists. Not in the mists outside the city, Rudd insisted. The mist wraiths are out there. They'll grab a man and take his face, sure as the Lord Ruler.
Harmon rolled his eyes.
Rudd's right about one thing, Distin said. That man isn't human. He might not be a mist wraith, but he's not Sky either. I've heard of him doing things, like only they can do. The ones that come out at night. You saw what he did to Cayman.
Mistborn, Harmon muttered. Mistborn.
Vin had heard the term before Kelsier had mentioned it to her, of course. Who hadn't? Yet the rumors about Mistborn made stories of Inquisitors and Mistings seem rational. It was said that Mistborn were heralds of the mists themselves, endowed with great powers by the Lord Ruler. Only high noblemen could be Mistborn. They were said to be a secret sect of assassins who served him, only going out at night. Rhene had always taught her that they were a myth, and Vin had assumed he was right.
And Kelsier says I, like he himself, am one of them.
How could she be what he said? Child of a prostitute, she was nobody. She was nothing.
Never trust a man who tells you good news, Rhene always said. It's the oldest but easiest way to con someone.
Yet she did have her luck, her allomancy. She could still sense the reserves Kelsier's vial had given her, and had tested her powers on the crew members. No longer limited to just a bit of luck a day, she found she could produce far more striking effects. Vin was coming to realize that her old goal in life, simply staying alive, was uninspired. There was so much more she could be doing. She had been a slave to Rhene, she had been a slave to Cayman. She would be a slave to this Kelsier, too, if it would lead her to eventual freedom. At his table, Mylef looked at his pocket watch, then stood.
All right, everyone out.
The room began to clear in preparation for Kelsier's meeting. Vin remained where she was. Kelsier had made it quite clear to the others that she was invited. She sat quietly for a bit, the room feeling far more comfortable to her now that it was empty. Kelsier's friends began to arrive a short time later. The first man down the steps had the build of a soldier. He wore a loose, sleeveless shirt that exposed a pair of well-sculpted arms. He was impressively muscular, but not massive, and had close-cropped hair that stuck up slightly on his head. The soldier's companion was a sharply dressed man in a nobleman's suit, plum vest, gold buttons, black overcoat, complete with short-brimmed hat and dueling cane. He was older than the soldier, and was a bit portly. He removed his hat upon entering the room, revealing a head of well-styled black hair. The two men were chatting amiably as they walked, but they paused when they saw the empty room.
"Ah, this must be our Twixt," said the man in the suit. "Has Kelsier arrived yet, my dear?"
He spoke with a simple familiarity, as if they were long-time friends. Suddenly, despite herself, Vin found herself liking this well-dressed, articulate man.
No,
she said quietly. Though overalls and a work shirt had always suited her, she suddenly wished that she owned something nicer. This man's very bearing seemed to demand a more formal atmosphere.
Should have known that Kel would be late to his own meeting, the soldier said, sitting down at one of the tables near the center of the room.
Indeed, said the suited man. I suppose his tardiness leaves us with a chance for some refreshment. I could so use something to drink.
Let me get you something, Vin said quickly, jumping to her feet.
How gracious of you, the suited man said, choosing a chair next to the soldier.
He sat with one leg crossed over the other, his dueling cane held to the side, tip against the floor, one hand resting on the top. Vin walked to the bar and began rummaging for drinks.
Breeze,
the soldier said with a warning tone as Vin selected a bottle of Cayman's most expensive wine and began pouring a cup.
Hmm?
The suited man said, raising an eyebrow. The soldier nodded toward Vin.
Oh, very well, the suited man said with a sigh.
Vin paused, wine half-poured, and frowned slightly. What am I doing?
I swear, Ham, the suited man said, you are dreadfully stiff sometimes.
Just because you can push someone around doesn't mean you should, Breeze.
Vin stood, dumbfounded.
He used luck on me.
When Kelsier had tried to manipulate her, she'd felt his touch and had been able to resist. This time, however, she hadn't even realized what she was doing. She looked up at the man, thinning her eyes.
Mistborn.
The suited man, Breeze, chuckled.
Hardly. Kelsier's the only scar, Mistborn, you're likely to ever meet, my dear, and pray you never are in a situation where you meet a noble one. No, I am just an ordinary, humble misting.
Humble?
Ham asked. Breeze shrugged. Vin looked down at the half-full cup of wine.
You pulled on my emotions. With allomancy, I mean.
I pushed on them, actually, Breeze said. Pulling makes a person less trusting and more determined. Pushing on emotions, soothing them, makes a person more trusting.
Regardless, you controlled me, Vin said. You made me fetch you a drink.
Oh, I wouldn't say that I made you do it, Breeze said. I just altered your emotions slightly, putting you in a frame of mind where you'd be more likely to do as I wished.
Ham rubbed his chin.
I don't know, Breeze. It's an interesting question. By influencing her emotions, did you take away her ability to choose? If, for instance, she were to kill or steal while under your control, would the crime be hers or yours?
Breeze rolled his eyes.
There's really no question to it at all. You shouldn't think about such things, Hammond. You'll hurt your brain. I offered her encouragement. I simply did it through an irregular means. But I'm not going to argue it with you, Ham.
The beefy man sighed, looking a little bit forlorn.
Are you going to bring me the drink?
Breeze asked hopefully, looking at Vin.
I mean, you're already up, and you're going to have to come back this direction to reach your seat anyway.
Vin examined her emotions. Did she feel irregularly drawn to do as the man asked? Was he manipulating her again? Finally, she simply walked away from the bar, leaving the drink where it was. Breeze sighed. He didn't stand to go get the drink himself, however. Vin walked tentatively toward the two men's table. She was accustomed to shadows and corners, close enough to eavesdrop, but far enough away to escape. Yet she couldn't hide from these men, not while the room was so empty. So she chose a chair at the table beside the one that the two men were using, then sat cautiously. She needed information. As long as she was ignorant, she was going to be at a severe disadvantage in this new world of misting crews. Breeze chuckled.
Nervous little thing, aren't you?
Vin ignored the comment.
You,
Vin said, nodding to Ham.
You're a misting, too?
Ham nodded.
I'm a thug.
Vin frowned in confusion.
I burn pewter, Ham said.
Again, Vin looked at him questioningly.
He can make himself stronger, my dear, Breeze said. He hits things, particularly other people, who try to interfere with what the rest of us are doing.
There's much more to it than that, Ham said. I run general security for jobs, providing my crew leader with manpower and warriors, assuming such are necessary.
And he'll try and bore you with random philosophy when it isn't,
Breeze added. Ham sighed.
Breeze, honestly, sometimes I don't know why I...
Ham trailed off as the door opened, admitting another man. The newcomer wore a dull tan overcoat, a pair of brown trousers, and a simple white shirt. However, his face was far more distinctive than his clothing. It was knotted and gnarled like a twisted piece of wood, and his eyes shone with a level of disapproving dissatisfaction only the elderly can display. Vin couldn't quite place his age. He was young enough that he wasn't stooped over, yet he was old enough that he made even the middle-aged Breeze look youthful. The newcomer looked over Vin and the others, huffed disdainfully, then walked to a table on the other side of the room and sat down. His steps were marked by a distinct limp. Breeze sighed.
I'm going to miss Trap.
We all will, Ham said quietly. Clubs is very good, though. I've worked with him before.
Breeze studied the newcomer.
I wonder if I could get him to bring my drink over.
Ham chuckled.
I'd pay money to see you try it.
I'm sure you would, Breeze said.
Vin eyed the newcomer, who seemed perfectly content to ignore her and the other two men.
What's he? Clubs? Breeze asked. He, my dear, is a smoker. He is what will keep the rest of us from being discovered by an inquisitor.
Vin chewed on her lip, digesting the new information as she studied Clubs. The man shot her a glare, and she looked away. As she turned, she noticed that Ham was looking at her.
I like you, kid, he said. The other Twixts I've worked with have either been too intimidated to talk to us, or they've been jealous of us for moving into their territory.
Indeed, Breeze said. You're not like most Crumbs. Of course, I'd like you a great deal more if you'd go fetch me that glass of wine.
Vin ignored him, glancing at Ham.
Crumb?
That's what some of the more self-important members of our society call lesser thieves, Ham said. They call you Crumbs since you tend to be involved with less inspired projects.
No offense intended, of course, Breeze said. Oh, I wouldn't ever take offense at...
Vin paused, feeling an irregular desire to please the well-dressed man. She glared at Breeze.
Stop that! See there, Breeze said, glancing at Ham. She still retains her ability to choose.
You're hopeless.
They assume I'm a Twixt, Vin thought. So Kelsier hasn't told them what I am. Why?
Time constraints? Or was the secret too valuable to share? How trustworthy were these men? And if they thought her a simple Crumb, why were they being so nice to her?
Who else are we waiting upon? Breeze asked, glancing at the doorway. Besides Kel and Dox, I mean.
Yeadon, Ham said.
Breeze frowned with a sour expression.
Ah, yes.
I agree, Ham said. But I'd be willing to bet that he feels the same way about us.
I don't even see why he was invited, Breeze said.
Ham shrugged.
Something to do with Kel's plan, obviously.
Ah, the infamous plan, Breeze said musingly. What job could it be? What indeed?
Ham shook his head.
Kel and his cursed sense of drama.
Indeed.
The door opened a few moments later, and the one they had spoken of, Yeadon, entered. He turned out to be an unassuming man, and Vin had trouble understanding why the other two were so displeased about his attendance. Short, with curly brown hair, Yeadon was dressed in simple gray ska clothing and a patched, soot-stained brown worker's coat. He regarded the surroundings with a look of disapproval. But he was nowhere near as openly hostile as Clubs, who still sat on the other side of the room, scowling at anyone who looked in his direction. Not a very big crew, Vin thought. With Kelsier and Doxson, that makes six of them. Of course, Hammond said that he led a group of thugs. Were the men at this meeting simply representatives? The leaders of smaller, more specialized groups? Some crews work that way. Breeze checked his pocket watch three more times before Kelsier finally arrived. The Mistborn crew leader burst through the door with his cheery enthusiasm, Doxson sauntering along behind. Ham stood immediately, smiling broadly and clasping hands with Kelsier. Breeze stood as well, and while his greeting was a bit more reserved, Vin had to admit that she had never seen any crew leader welcomed so happily by his men. "Ah," Kelsier said, looking toward the other side of the room. "Clubs and Yeadon, too. So everyone's here. Good. I absolutely loathe being made to wait." Breeze raised an eyebrow as he and Ham settled back into their chairs, Doxson taking his seat at the same table.
"Are we to receive any explanation for your tardiness?"
"Doxson and I were visiting my brother," Kelsier explained, walking toward the front of the lair. He turned and leaned back against the bar, scanning the room. When Kelsier's eyes fell on Vin, he winked.
"Your brother," Ham said. "Is Marsh coming to the meeting?"
Kelsier and Doxson shared a look.
"Not tonight," Kelsier said. "But he'll join the crew eventually."
Vin studied the others. They were skeptical.
Tension between Kelsier and his brother, perhaps?
Breeze raised his dueling cane, pointing the tip at Kelsier.
"All right, Kelsier, you've kept this job secret from us for 8 months now. We know it's big, we know you're excited, and we're all properly annoyed at you for being so secretive. So why don't you just go ahead and tell us what it is?"
Kelsier smiled. Then he stood up straight, waving a hand toward the dirty, plain-looking Yeadon.
"Gentlemen, meet your new employer."
This was apparently quite a shocking statement.
"Him?"
Ham asked.
"Him,"
Kelsier said with a nod.
"What?"
Yeadon asked, speaking for the first time.
"You have trouble working with someone who actually has morals?"
"It's not that, my dear man,"
Breeze said, setting his dueling cane across his lap.
"It's just that, well, I was under the strange impression that you didn't like our types very much."
"I don't," Yeadon said flatly. "You're selfish, undisciplined, and you've turned your backs on the rest of the ska. You dress nicely, but on the inside you're dirty as ash."
Ham snorted.
"I can see already that this job is going to be great for crew morale."
Vin watched quietly, chewing on her lip. Yeadon was obviously a ska worker, probably a member of a forge or textile mill. What connection did he have with the underground? And how would he be able to afford the services of a thieving crew, especially one as apparently specialized as Kelsier's team? Perhaps Kelsier noticed her confusion, for she found him looking at her as the others continued to speak.
"I'm still a little confused," Ham said. "Yeadon, we're all aware of how you regard thieves. So why hire us?"
Yeadon squirmed a bit.
"Because," he finally said, "everyone knows how effective you are."
Breeze chuckled.
"Disapproving of our morals doesn't make you unwilling to make use of our skills, I see. So what is the job, then? What does the Ska Rebellion wish of us?"
Ska Rebellion, Vin thought, a piece of the conversation falling into place. There were two sides to the underworld. The far larger portion was made up of the thieves, crews, whores, and beggars, who tried to survive outside of mainstream ska culture. And then there were the rebels, the people who worked against the Final Empire. Rean had always called them fools, a sentiment shared by most of the people, both Underworlders and regular ska, that Vin had met. All eyes slowly turned to Kelsier, who leaned back against the bar again.
"The Ska Rebellion, courtesy of its leader Yeadon, has hired us for something very specific."
"What?" Ham asked. "Robbery? Assassination?"
"A little of both," Kelsier said. "And at the same time, neither one. Gentlemen, this isn't going to be a regular job. It's going to be different from anything any crew has ever tried to pull. We're going to help Yeadon overthrow the Final Empire."
Silence.
"Excuse me?" Ham asked.
"You heard me right, Ham," Kelsier said. "That's the job I've been planning. The destruction of the Final Empire. Or at least its center of government. Yeadon has hired us to supply him with an army, then provide him with a favorable opportunity to seize control of the city."
Ham sat back, then shared a glance with Breeze. Both men turned toward Doxson, who nodded solemnly. The room remained quiet for a moment longer. Then the silence was broken as Yeadon began to laugh ruefully to himself.
"I should never have agreed to this," Yeadon said, shaking his head. "Now that you say it, I realize how ridiculous it all sounds."
"Trust me, Yeadon," Kelsier said. "These men have made a habit of pulling off plans that seem ridiculous at first glance."
"That may be true, Kel," Breeze said, "but in this case, I find myself agreeing with our disapproving friend. Overthrow the Final Empire. That is something that Ska rebels have been working toward for 1,000 years. What makes you think that we can achieve anything where those men have failed?"
Kelsier smiled.
"We'll succeed because we have vision, Breeze. That's something the Rebellion has always lacked."
"Excuse me," Yeadon said indignantly.
"It's true, unfortunately," Kelsier said. "The Rebellion condemns people like us because of our greed. But for all their high morals, which, by the way, I respect, they never get anything done. Yeadon, your men hide in woods and in hills, plotting how they'll someday rise up and lead a glorious war against the Final Empire. But your kind has no idea how to develop and execute a proper plan."
Eden's expression grew dark.
"And you have no idea what you are talking about."
"Oh?" Kelsier said lightly. "Tell me, what has your rebellion accomplished during its 1,000-year struggle? Where are your successes and your victories? The massacre of Tougier 3 centuries ago, where 7,000 Ska rebels were slaughtered? The occasional raid of a traveling canal boat, or the kidnapping of a minor noble official?"
Yeadon flushed.
"That's the best we can manage with the people we have. Don't blame my men for their failures. Blame the rest of the Ska. We can't ever get them to help. They've been beaten down for a millennium. They haven't got any spirit left. It's difficult enough to get 1 in 1,000 to listen to us, let alone rebel."
"Peace, Yeadon," Kelsier said, holding up a hand. "I'm not trying to insult your courage. We're on the same side, remember? You came to me specifically because you were having trouble recruiting people for your army."
"I'm regretting that decision more and more, thief," Yeadon said.
"Well, you've already paid us," Kelsier said. "So it's a little late to back out now. But we'll get you that army, Yeadon. The men in this room are the most capable, most clever, and most skilled allomancers in the city. You'll see."
The room grew quiet again. Vin sat at her table, watching the interaction with a frown.
"What is your game, Kelsier?"
His words about overthrowing the Final Empire were obviously a front. It seemed most likely to her that he intended to scam the Ska Rebellion. But if he'd already been paid, then why continue the charade? Kelsier turned from Yeadon to Breeze and Ham.
"All right, gentlemen, what do you think?"
The two men shared a look. Finally, Breeze spoke.
Lord Ruler knows I've never been one to turn down a challenge. But, Kel, I do question your reasoning. Are you sure we can do this?
I'm positive, Kelsier said. Previous attempts to overthrow the Lord Ruler have failed because they lacked proper organization and planning. We're thieves, gentlemen, and we're extraordinarily good ones. We can rob the unrobbable and fool the unfoolable. We know how to take an incredibly large task and break it down to manageable pieces, then deal with each of those pieces. We know how to get what we want. These things make us perfect for this particular task. Breeze frowned.
And how much are we getting paid for achieving the impossible?
30,000 boxings, Yeadon said. Half now, half when you deliver the army.
30,000, Ham said. For an operation this big? That will barely cover expenses. We'll need a spy among the nobility to watch for rumors. We'll need a couple of safe houses, not to mention some place big enough to hide and train an entire army.
No use haggling now, thief, Yeadon snapped. 30,000 may not sound like much to your type, but it's the result of decades of saving on our part. We can't pay you more because we don't have anything more.
It's good work, gentlemen, Doxson noted, joining the conversation for the first time.
Yes, well, that's all great, Breeze said. I consider myself a nice enough fellow. But this just seems a bit too altruistic, not to mention stupid.
Well, Kelsier said, there might be a little bit more in it for us.
Vin perked up and Breeze smiled.
The Lord Ruler's Treasury, Kelsier said. The plan, as it stands now, is to provide Yeadon with an army and an opportunity to seize the city. Once he takes the palace, he'll capture the treasury and use its funds to secure power.
And central to that treasury is the Lord Ruler's Atium, Breeze said. Kelsier nodded.
Our agreement with Yeadon provides us half of the Atium reserves we find in the palace, no matter how vast they may be.
Atium. Vin had heard of the metal, but she had never actually seen any. It was incredibly rare, supposedly used only by noblemen. Ham was smiling.
Well, now, he said slowly, that's almost a big enough prize to be tempting.
That Atium stockpile is supposed to be enormous, Kelsier said. The Lord Ruler sells the metal only in small bits, charging outrageous sums to the nobility. He has to keep a huge reserve of it to make certain he controls the market, and to make certain he has enough wealth for emergencies.
True, Breeze said. But are you sure you want to try something like this so soon after what happened the last time we tried getting into the palace?
We're going to do things differently this time, Kelsier said. Gentlemen, I'll be frank with you. This isn't going to be an easy job, but it can work. The plan is simple. We're going to find a way to neutralize the Luthadel garrison, leaving the area without a policing force. Then we're going to throw the city into chaos.
We've got a couple of options on how to do that, Doxson said, but we can talk about that later.
Kelsier nodded.
Then, in that chaos, Yeadon will march his army into Luthadel and seize the palace, taking the Lord Ruler prisoner. While Yeadon secures the city, we'll pilfer the Atium. We'll give half to him, then disappear with the other half. After that, it's his job to hang on to what he's grabbed.
Sounds a little dangerous for you, Yeadon, Ham noted, glancing at the rebel leader.
He shrugged.
Perhaps. But if we do, by some miracle, end up in control of the palace, then we'll have at least done something no Ska Rebellion has ever achieved before. For my men, this isn't just about riches. It isn't even about surviving. It's about doing something grand, something wonderful, to give the Ska hope. But I don't expect you people to understand things like that.
Kelsier shot a quieting glance at Yeadon, and the man sniffed and sat back.
Did he use allomancy? Vin wondered.
She'd seen employer-crew relationships before, and it seemed that Yeadon was much more in Kelsier's pocket than the other way around. Kelsier turned back to Hammond Breeze.
There's more to all this than simply a show of daring. If we manage to steal that Atium, it will be a sound blow to the Lord Ruler's financial foundation. He depends on the money that Atium provides. Without it, he could very well be left without the means to pay his armies. Even if he escapes our trap, or if we decide to take the city when he's gone to minimize having to deal with him, he'll be financially ruined. He won't be able to march soldiers in to take the city away from Yeadon. If this works right, we'll have the city in chaos anyway, and the nobility will be too weak to react against the rebel forces. The Lord Ruler will be left confused and unable to mount a sizable army.
And the Kolos? Ham asked quietly.
Kelsier paused. If he marches those creatures on his own capital city, the destruction it would cause could be even more dangerous than financial instability. In the chaos, the provincial noblemen will rebel and set themselves up as kings, and the Lord Ruler won't have the troops to bring them into line. Yeadon's rebels will be able to hold Luthadel, and we, my friends, will be very, very rich. Everyone gets what they want.
You're forgetting the Steel Ministry, Clubs snapped, sitting almost forgotten at the side of the room. Those Inquisitors won't just let us throw their petty theocracy into chaos.
Kelsier paused, turning toward the gnarled man.
We will have to find a way to deal with the Ministry. I've got a few plans for that. Either way, problems like that are the things that we, as a crew, will have to work out. We have to get rid of the Luthadel garrison. There's no way we'll be able to get anything done with them policing the streets. We'll have to come up with an appropriate way to throw the city into chaos, and we'll have to find a way to keep the obligators off our trail. But if we play this right, we might be able to force the Lord Ruler to send the palace guard, maybe even the Inquisitors, into the city to restore order. That will leave the palace itself exposed, giving Yeadon a perfect opportunity to strike. After that, it won't matter what happens with the Ministry or the garrison. The Lord Ruler won't have the money to maintain control of his empire. I don't know, Kel, Breeze said, shaking his head.
His flippancy was subdued. He seemed to be honestly considering the plan.
The Lord Ruler got that Atium somewhere. What if he just goes and mines some more?
Ham nodded.
No one even knows where the Atium mine is.
I wouldn't say no one, Kelsier said with a smile. Breeze and Ham shared a look.
You know?
Ham asked.
Of course, Kelsier said. I spent a year of my life working there.
The pits?
Ham asked with surprise. Kelsier nodded.
That's why the Lord Ruler makes certain nobody survives working there. He can't afford to let his secret out. It's not just a penal colony, not just a hellhole where Scar sent to die. It's a mine.
Of course, Breeze said.
Kelsier stood up straight, stepping away from the bar and walking toward Hammond Breeze's table.
We have a chance here, gentlemen. A chance to do something great, something no other thieving crew has ever done. We'll rob from the Lord Ruler himself. But there's more. The pits nearly killed me, and I've seen things differently since I escaped. I see the Ska working without hope. I see the thieving crews trying to survive on aristocratic leavings, often getting themselves and other Ska killed in the process. I see the Ska Rebellion trying so hard to resist the Lord Ruler and never making any progress. The Rebellion fails because it's too unwieldy and spread out. Any time one of its many pieces gains momentum, the Steel Ministry crushes it. That's not the way to defeat the Final Empire, gentlemen. But a small team, specialized and highly skilled, has a hope. We can work without great risk of exposure. We know how to avoid the Steel Ministry's tendrils. We understand how the High Nobility thinks and how to exploit its members. We can do this.
He paused beside Breeze and Ham's table.
I don't know, Kel, Ham said. It's not that I'm disagreeing with your motives. It's just that... Well, this seems a bit foolhardy.
Kelsier smiled. I know it does. But you're going to go along with it anyway, aren't you? Ham paused, then nodded.
You know I'll join your crew no matter what the job. This sounds crazy, but so do most of your plans. Just tell me. Are you serious about overthrowing the Lord Ruler?
Kelsier nodded. For some reason, Vin was almost tempted to believe him. Ham nodded firmly.
All right, then. I'm in.
Breeze? Kelsier asked. The well-dressed man shook his head.
I'm not sure, Kel. This is a bit extreme, even for you.
We need you, Breeze, Kel said. No one can sue the crowd like you can. If we're going to raise an army, we'll need your allomancers and your powers.
Well, that much is true, Breeze said. But even still...
Kelsier smiled, then he set something on the table. The cup of wine Vin had poured for Breeze. She hadn't even noticed that Kelsier had grabbed it off of the bar.
Think of the challenge, Breeze, Kelsier said.
Breeze glanced at the cup, then looked up at Kelsier. Finally, he laughed, reaching for the wine.
Fine, I'm in. It's impossible, a gruff voice said from the back of the room.
Clubs sat with folded arms, regarding Kelsier with a scowl.
What are you really planning, Kelsier?
I'm being honest, Kelsier replied. I plan to take the Lord Ruler's Atium and overthrow his empire.
You can't, the man said. It's idiocy. The Inquisitors will hang us all by hooks through our throats.
Perhaps, Kelsier said. But think of the reward if we succeed. Wealth, power, and a land where the Ska can live like men rather than slaves.
Clubs snorted loudly. Then he stood, his chair toppling backward onto the floor behind him.
No reward would be enough. The Lord Ruler tried to have you killed once. I see that you won't be satisfied until he gets it right.
With that, the older man turned and stalked in a limping gait from the room, slamming the door behind him. The lair grew quiet.
Well, guess we'll need a different smoker, Doxson said.
You're just going to let him go? Yeadon demanded. He knows everything.
Breeze chuckled.
Aren't you supposed to be the moral one in this little group?
Morals doesn't have anything to do with it, Yeadon said. Letting someone go like that is foolish. He could bring the obligators down on us in minutes.
Vin nodded in agreement, but Kelsier just shook his head.
I don't work that way, Yeadon. I invited Clubs to a meeting where I outlined a dangerous plan, one some people might even call stupid. I'm not going to have him assassinated because he decided it was too dangerous. If you do things like that, pretty soon nobody will come listen to your plans in the first place.
Besides, Doxson said, we wouldn't invite someone to one of these meetings unless we trusted him not to betray us.
Impossible, Vin thought, frowning. He had to be bluffing to keep up crew morale. Nobody was that trusting. After all, hadn't the others said that Kelsier's failure a few years before, the event that had sent him to the pits of Hathsin, had come because of a betrayal? He probably had assassins following Clubs at that very moment, watching to make certain he didn't go to the authorities.
All right, Yeadon, Kelsier said, getting back to business. They accepted. The plan is on.
Are you still in? Will you give the rebellion's money back if I say no?
Yeadon asked. The only response to that was a quiet chuckle from Ham. Yeadon's expression darkened, but he just shook his head.
If I had any other option...
Oh, stop complaining, Kelsier said. You're officially part of a thieving crew now, so you might as well come over here and sit with us.
Yeadon paused for a moment, then sighed and walked over to sit at Breeze, Ham, and Doxson's table, beside which Kelsier was still standing. Vin still sat at the next table over. Kelsier turned, looking over toward Vin. "What about you, Vin?" She paused. "Why is he asking me? He already knows he has a hold over me. The job doesn't matter as long as I learn what he knows." Kelsier waited expectantly. "I'm in," Vin said, assuming that was what he wanted to hear. She must have guessed correctly, for Kelsier smiled, then nodded to the last chair at the table. Vin sighed, but did as he indicated, standing and walking over to take the last seat.
"Who is the child?" Yeadon asked.
"Twixt," Breeze said.
Kelsier cocked an eyebrow.
"Actually, Vin is something of a new recruit. My brother caught her soothing his emotions a few months back."
"Soother, eh?" Ham asked. "Guess we can always use another of those."
"Actually," Kelsier noted, "it seems she can riot people's emotions as well."
Breeze started.
"Really?"
Ham asked. Kelsier nodded.
"Docs and I tested her just a few hours ago."
Breeze chuckled.
"And here I was telling her that she'd probably never meet another Mistborn besides yourself."
"A second Mistborn on the team," Ham said appreciatively. "Well, that increases our chances somewhat."
"What are you saying?" Yeadon sputtered. "Ska can't be Mistborn. I'm not even sure if Mistborn exist. I've certainly never met one."
Breeze raised an eyebrow, then laid a hand on Yeadon's shoulder.
"You should try not to talk so much, friend," he suggested. "You'll sound far less stupid that way."
Yeadon shook off Breeze's hand, and Ham laughed. Vin, however, sat quietly, considering the implications of what Kelsier had said. The part about stealing the Atium reserves was tempting, but seizing the city to do it? Were these men really that reckless? Kelsier pulled a chair over to the table for himself and sat down on it the wrong way, resting his arms on the seat back. "All right," he said. "We have a crew. We'll plan specifics at the next meeting. But I want you all to be thinking about the job. I have some plans, but I want fresh minds to consider our task. We'll need to discuss ways to get the Luthadel garrison out of the city, and ways that we can throw this place into so much chaos that the Great Houses can't mobilize their forces to stop Yeadon's army when it attacks." The members of the group, save Yeadon, nodded. "Before we end for the evening, however," Kelsier continued, "there is one more part of the plan I want to warn you about."
"More?" Breeze asked with a chuckle. "Stealing the Lord Ruler's fortune and overthrowing his empire aren't enough?"
"No," Kelsier said. "If I can, I'm going to kill him, too." Silence.
"Kelsier," Ham said slowly, "the Lord Ruler is the sliver of infinity. He's a piece of God himself. You can't kill him. Even capturing him will probably prove impossible."
Kelsier didn't reply. His eyes, however, were determined.
"That's it," Vin thought. "He has to be insane."
"The Lord Ruler and I," Kelsier said quietly, "we have an unsettled debt. He took Mare from me, and he nearly took my own sanity as well. I'll admit to you all that part of my reason for this plan is to get revenge on him. We're going to take his government, his home, and his fortune from him. However, for that to work, we'll have to get rid of him. Perhaps imprison him in his own dungeons. At the very least, we'll have to get him out of the city. However, I can think of something far better than either option. Down those pits where he sent me, I snapped and came to an awakening of my allomantic powers. Now I intend to use them to kill him." Kelsier reached into his suit pocket and pulled something out. He set it on the table.
"In the north, they have a legend," Kelsier said. "It teaches that the Lord Ruler isn't immortal. Not completely. They say he can be killed with the right metal. The 11th metal. That metal."
Eyes turned toward the object on the table. It was a thin bar of metal, perhaps as long and wide as Vin's small finger, with straight sides. It was silvery white in color.
"The 11th metal?" Breeze asked uncertainly. "I've heard of no such legend."
"The Lord Ruler has suppressed it," Kelsier said. "But it can still be found if you know where to look. Allomantic theory teaches of 10 metals, the 8 basic metals, and the 2 high metals. There is another one, however, unknown to most, one far more powerful even than the other 10. Breeze frowned skeptically. Yeadon, however, appeared intrigued.
"And this metal can somehow kill the Lord Ruler?"
Kelsier nodded. "It's his weakness. The Steel Ministry wants you to believe that he's immortal, but even he can be killed by an allomancer burning this." Ham reached out, picking up the thin bar of metal.
"Where did you get it?"
"In the north," Kelsier said. "In a land near the far peninsula, a land where people still remember what their old kingdom was called in the days before the Ascension."
"How does it work?" Breeze asked.
"I'm not sure," Kelsier said frankly, "but I intend to find out." Ham regarded the porcelain-colored metal, turning it over his fingers.
"Kill the Lord Ruler," Vin thought.
The Lord Ruler was a force, like the winds or the mists. One did not kill such things. They didn't live, really. They simply were. "Regardless," Kelsier said, accepting the medal back from Ham, "you don't need to worry about this. Killing the Lord Ruler is my task. If it proves impossible, we'll settle for tricking him outside the city, then robbing him silly. I just thought you should know what I'm planning."
"I've bound myself to a madman," Vin thought with resignation.
But that didn't really matter. Not as long as he taught her allomancy. "I don't even understand what I'm supposed to do. The terrace philosophers claim that I'll know my duty when the time comes, but that's a small comfort. The deepness must be destroyed, and apparently I'm the only one who can do so. It ravages the world even now. If I don't stop it soon, there will be nothing left of this land but bones and dust." 5.
"Aha!"
Kelsier's triumphant figure popped up from behind Cayman's bar, a look of satisfaction on his face. He brought his arm up and thunked a dusty wine bottle down on the countertop. Doxson looked over with amusement.
"Where'd you find it?"
"One of the secret drawers," Kelsier said, dusting off the bottle.
"I thought I'd found all of those," Doxson said.
"You did. One of them had a false back." Doxson chuckled.
"Clever."
Kelsier nodded, unstoppering the bottle and pouring out 3 cups.
"The trick is to never stop looking. There's always another secret."
He gathered up the 3 cups and walked over to join Vin and Doxson at the table. Vin accepted her cup with a tentative hand. The meeting had ended a short time earlier, Breeze, Ham, and Yeadon leaving to ponder the things Kelsier had told them. Vin felt that she should have left as well, but she had nowhere to go. Doxson and Kelsier seemed to take it for granted that she would remain with them. Kelsier took a long sip of the rubicund wine, then smiled.
"Ah, that's much better."
Doxson nodded in agreement, but Vin didn't taste her own drink.
"We're going to need another smoker," Doxson noted.
Kelsier nodded.
"The others seem to take it well, though." "Breeze is still uncertain," Doxson said.
"He won't back out.
Breeze likes a challenge, and he'll never find a challenge greater than this one."
Kelsier smiled.
"Besides, it'd drive him insane to know that we're pulling a job that he wasn't in on."
"Still, he's right to be apprehensive," Doxson said. "I'm a little worried myself."
Kelsier nodded his agreement, and Vin frowned.
"So are they serious about the plan? Or is this still a show for my sake?"
The two men seemed so competent. Yet overthrowing the final empire? They'd sooner stop the mists from flowing or the sun from rising.
"When do your other friends get here?"
Doxson asked. "A couple days," Kelsier said. "We'll need to have another smoker by then. I'm also going to need some more atium." Doxson frowned.
"Already?"
Kelsier nodded.
"I spent most of it buying Orser's contract, then used my last bit at Tresting's plantation."
"Tresting?" The nobleman who had been killed in his manor the week before. "How was Kelsier involved? And what was it Kelsier said before about Atium?"
"He'd claimed that the Lord Ruler kept control of the high nobility by maintaining a monopoly on the metal."
Doxson rubbed his bearded chin.
"Atium's not easy to come by, Kel. It took nearly 8 months of planning to steal you that last bit."
"That's because you had to be delicate," Kelsier said with a devious smile. Doxson eyed Kelsier with a look of slight apprehension. Kelsier just smiled more broadly, and finally Doxson rolled his eyes, sighing. Then he glanced at Vin.
"You haven't touched your drink."
Vin shook her head. Doxson waited for an explanation, and eventually Vin was forced to respond.
"I don't like to drink anything I didn't prepare myself."
Kelsier chuckled.
"She reminds me of Vent."
"Vent," Doxson said with a snort.
"The lass is a bit paranoid, but she's not that bad. I swear that man was so jumpy that his own heartbeat could startle him."
The two men shared a laugh. Vin, however, was only made more uncomfortable by the friendly air.
"What do they expect of me? Am I to be an apprentice of some sort?"
"Well then," Doxson said, "are you going to tell me how you plan on getting yourself some atium?" Kelsier opened his mouth to respond, but the stairs clattered with the sound of someone coming down. Kelsier and Doxson turned. Vin, of course, had seated herself so she could see both entrances to the room without having to move. Vin expected the newcomer to be one of Cayman's crew members, sent to see if Kelsier was done with the lair yet. Therefore, she was completely surprised when the door swung open to reveal the surly, gnarled face of the man called Clubs. Kelsier smiled, eyes twinkling.
"He's not surprised. Pleased, perhaps, but not surprised."
"Clubs," Kelsier said. Clubs stood in the doorway, giving the three of them an impressively disapproving stare. Finally, he hobbled into the room. A thin, awkward-looking teenage boy followed him. The boy fetched Clubs a chair and put it by Kelsier's table. Clubs settled down, grumbling slightly to himself. Finally, he eyed Kelsier with a squinting, wrinkle-nosed expression.
"The soother gone?"
"Breeze?"
Kelsier asked.
"Yes, he left."
Clubs grunted. Then he eyed the bottle of wine.
"Help yourself," Kelsier said.
Clubs waved for the boy to go fetch him a cup from the bar, then turned back to Kelsier.
"I had to be sure," he said. "Never can trust yourself when a soother is around, especially one like him."
"You're a smoker, Clubs," Kelsier said. "He couldn't do much to you, not if you didn't want him to."
Clubs shrugged.
"I don't like soothers. It's not just allomancy. Men like that, well, you can't trust that you aren't being manipulated when they are around. Copper or no copper."
"I wouldn't rely on something like that to get your loyalty," Kelsier said.
"So I've heard,"
Clubs said as the boy poured him a cup of wine.
"Had to be sure, though. Had to think about things without that breeze around."
He scowled, though Vin had trouble determining why, then took the cup and downed half of it in one gulp.
"Good wine," he said with a grunt.
Then he looked over at Kelsier.
"So, the pits really did drive you insane, eh?"
"Completely,"
Kelsier said with a straight face. Clubs smiled, though on his face the expression had a decidedly twisted look.
"You mean to go through with this, then? This so-called job of yours?"
Kelsier nodded solemnly. Clubs downed the rest of his wine.
"You've got yourself a smoker, then. Not for the money, though. If you're really serious about toppling this government, then I'm in.
Kelsier smiled.
And don't smile at me, Clubs snapped. I hate that.
I wouldn't dare. Well, Doxson said, pouring himself another drink, that solves the smoker problem.
Won't matter much, Clubs said. You're going to fail. I've spent my life trying to hide mistings from the Lord Ruler and his obligators. He gets them all eventually anyway.
Why bother helping us then? Doxson asked.
Because, Clubs said, standing, the Lord's going to get me sooner or later. At least this way I'll be able to spit in his face as I go. Overthrowing the final empire?
He smiled.
It's got style. Let's go, kid. We've got to get the shop ready for visitors.
Vin watched them go, Clubs limping out the door, the boy pulling it closed behind them. Then she glanced at Kelsier.
You knew he'd come back.
He shrugged, standing and stretching.
I hoped.
People are attracted to vision. The job I'm proposing, well, it just isn't the sort of thing you walk away from. At least not if you're a bored old man who's generally annoyed at life. Now, Vin, I assume that your crew owns this entire building? Vin nodded. The shop upstairs is a front.
Good,
Kelsier said, checking his pocket watch, then handing it to Doxson.
Tell your friends that they can have their lair back. The mists are probably already coming out.
And us? Doxson asked. Kelsier smiled.
We're going to the roof. Like I told you, I have to fetch some Atium.
By day, Luthadel was a blackened city, scorched by soot and red sunlight. It was hard, distinct, and oppressive. At night, however, the mists came to blur and obscure. High noble keeps became ghostly, looming silhouettes. Streets seemed to grow more narrow in the fog, every thoroughfare becoming a lonely, dangerous alleyway. Even noblemen and thieves were apprehensive about going out at night. It took a strong heart to brave the foreboding, misty silence. The dark city at night was a place for the desperate and the foolhardy. It was a land of swirling mystery and strange creatures.
Strange creatures like me, Kelsier thought.
He stood upon the ledge that ran around the lip of the flat-roofed lair. Shadowed buildings loomed in the night around him, and the mists made everything seem to shift and move in the darkness. Weak lights peeked from the occasional window, but the tiny beads of illumination were huddled, frightened things. A cool breeze slipped across the rooftop, shifting the haze, brushing against Kelsier's mist-wetted cheek like an exhaled breath. In days past, back before everything had gone wrong, he had always sought out a rooftop on the evening before a job, wishing to overlook the city. He didn't realize he was observing his old custom this night until he glanced to the side, expecting Mare to be there next to him, as she always had been. Instead, he found only the empty air. Lonely. Silent. The mists had replaced her. Poorly. He sighed and turned. Vin and Doxson stood behind him on the rooftop. Both looked apprehensive to be out in the mists, but they dealt with their fear. One did not get far in the underworld without learning to stomach the mists. Kelsier had learned to do far more than stomach them. He had gone among them so often during the last few years that he was beginning to feel more comfortable at night, within the mist's obscuring embrace, than he did at day.
Kel, Doxson said, do you have to stand on the ledge like that? Our plans may be a bit crazy, but I'd rather not have them end with you splattered across the cobblestones down there.
Kelsier smiled.
He still doesn't think of me as a mistborn, he thought. It will take some getting used to for all of them.
Years before, he had become the most infamous crew leader in Luthadel, and he had done it without even being an Allomancer. Mare had been a Tin Eye, but he and Doxson, they had just been regular men. One a half-breed with no powers, the other a runaway plantation ska. Together they had brought great houses to their knees, stealing brashly from the most powerful men in the Final Empire. Now Kelsier was more, so much more. Once he had dreamed of Allomancy, wishing for a power like Mare's. She had been dead before he'd snapped, coming to his powers. She would never see what he would do with them. Before, the high nobility had feared him. It had taken a trap set by the Lord Ruler himself to capture Kelsier. Now, the Final Empire itself would shake before he was finished with it. He scanned the city once more, breathing in the mists, then hopped down off the ledge and strolled over to join Doxin and Vin. They carried no lights. Ambient starlight, diffused by the mists, was enough to see by in most cases. Kelsier took off his jacket and vest, handing them to Doxin. Then he untucked his shirt, letting the long garment hang loose. The fabric was dark enough that it wouldn't give him away in the night. "All right," Kelsier said. "Who should I try?" Doxin frowned. "You're sure you want to do this?" Kelsier smiled. Doxin sighed. "Houses Urbane and Teniart have been hit recently, though not for their atium." "Which house is the strongest right now?" Kelsier asked, squatting down and undoing the ties on his pack, which rested by Doxin's feet. "Who would no one consider hitting?" Doxin paused. "Venture," he finally said. "They've been on top for the last few years. They keep a standing force of several hundred men, and the local house nobility includes a good 2 dozen mistings." Kelsier nodded. "Well, that's where I'll go, then. They're certain to have some atium." He pulled open the pack, then whipped out a dark gray cloak. Large and enveloping, the cloak wasn't constructed from a single piece of cloth. Rather, it was made up of hundreds of long ribbon-like strips. They were sewn together at the shoulders and across the chest, but mostly they hung separate from one another, like overlapping streamers. Kelsier threw on the garment, its strips of cloth twisting and curling, almost like the mists themselves. Doxin exhaled softly. "I've never been so close to someone wearing one of those." "What is it?" Vin asked, her quiet voice almost haunting in the night mists. "A mist cloak," Doxin said. "They all wear the things. It's kind of like a sign of membership in their club." "It's colored and constructed to hide you in the mist," Kelsier said. "And it warns city guards and other mistborn not to bother you." He spun, letting the cloak flare dramatically. "I think it suits me." Doxin rolled his eyes. "All right," Kelsier said, bending down and pulling a cloth belt from his pack. "House Venture. Is there anything I need to know?" "Lord Venture supposedly has a safe in his study," Doxin said. "That's where he'd probably keep his atium stash. You'll find the study on the 3rd floor, 3 rooms in from the upper southern balcony. Be careful. House Venture keeps about 12 haze killers in addition to its regular troops and mistings." Kelsier nodded, tying on the belt. It had no buckle, but it did contain 2 small sheaths. He pulled a pair of glass daggers from the bag, checked them for nicks, and slid them into the sheaths. He kicked off his shoes and stripped off his stockings, leaving himself barefoot on the chill stones. With the shoes also went the last bit of metal on his person, save for his coin pouch and the 3 vials of metals in his belt. He selected the largest one, downed its contents, then handed the empty vial to Doxin. "That it?" Kelsier asked. Doxin nodded. "Good luck." Beside him, the girl Vin was watching Kelsier's preparations with intense curiosity. She was a quiet, small thing, but she hid an intensity that he found impressive. She was paranoid, true, but not timid. "You'll get your chance, kid," he thought. "Just not tonight." "Well," he said, pulling a coin from his pouch and tossing it off the side of the building. "Guess I'll be going. I'll meet you back at Clubs' shop in a bit." Doxin nodded. Kelsier turned and walked back up onto the roof's ledge. Then he jumped off the building. Mist curled in the air around him. He burned steel, second of the basic allomantic metals. Translucent blue lines sprang into existence around him, visible only to his eyes. Each one led from the center of his chest out to a nearby source of metal. The lines were all relatively faint, a sign that they pointed to metal sources that were small, door hinges, nails, and other bits. The type of source metal didn't matter. Burning iron or steel would point blue lines at all kinds of metal, assuming they were close enough and large enough to be noticeable. Kelsier chose the line that pointed directly beneath him, toward his coin. Burning steel, he pushed against the coin. His descent immediately stopped, and he was thrown back up into the air in the opposite direction along the blue line. He reached out to the side, selected a passing window clasp, and pushed against it, angling himself to the side. The careful nudge sent him up and over the lip of the building directly across the street from Vin's lair. Kelsier landed with a lithe step, falling into a crouch and running across the building's peaked roof. He paused in the darkness at the other side, peering through the swirling air. He burned tin, and felt it flare to life in his chest, enhancing his senses. Suddenly the mists seemed less deep. It wasn't that the night around him grew any lighter. His ability to perceive simply increased. In the distance to the north, he could just barely make out a large structure. Keep Venture. Kelsier left his tin on. It burned slowly, and he probably didn't need to worry about running out. As he stood, the mists curled slightly around his body. They twisted and spun, running in a slight, barely noticeable current beside him. The mists knew him. They claimed him. They could sense allomancy. He jumped, pushing against a metal chimney behind him, sending himself in a wide, horizontal leap. He tossed a coin even as he jumped, the tiny bit of metal flickering through the darkness and fog. He pushed against the coin before it hit the ground, the force of his weight driving it downward in a sharp motion. As soon as it hit the cobblestones, Kelsier's pushing forced him upward, turning the second half of his leap into a graceful arc. Kelsier landed on another peaked wooden rooftop. Steel pushing and iron pulling were the first things that Gemmel had taught him.
"When you push on something, it's like you're throwing your weight against it," the old lunatic had said. "And you can't change how much you weigh. You're an allomancer, not some northern mystic. Don't pull on something that weighs less than you unless you want it to come flying at you. And don't push on something heavier than you unless you want to get tossed in the other direction."
Kelsier scratched his scars, then pulled his mist cloak tight as he crouched on the roof, the wooden grain biting his unshod toes. He often wished that burning tin didn't enhance all of the senses, or at least not all of them at once. He needed the improved eyesight to see in the darkness, and he made good use of the improved hearing as well. However, burning tin made the night seem even more chilly to his overly sensitive skin, and his feet registered every pebble and wooden ripple they touched. Keep Venture rose before him. Compared with the murky city, the keep seemed to blaze with light. High nobles kept different schedules from regular people. The ability to afford, even squander, lamp oil and candles meant that the wealthy didn't have to bow before the whims of season or sun. The keep was majestic. That much was visible simply from the architecture. While it maintained a defensive wall around the grounds, the keep itself was more an artistic construction than a fortification. Sturdy buttressings arced out from the sides, allowing for intricate windows and delicate spires. Brilliant stained-glass windows stretched high along the sides of the rectangular building, and they shone with light from within, giving the surrounding mists a variegated glow. Kelsier burned iron, flaring it strong and searching the night for large sources of metal. He was too far away from the keep to use small items like coins or hinges. He'd need a larger anchor to cover this distance. Most of the blue lines were faint. Kelsier marked a couple of them, moving in a slow pattern up ahead. Probably a pair of guards standing on the rooftop. Kelsier would be sensing their breastplates and weapons. Despite alimentic considerations, most noblemen still armed their soldiers with metal. Mistings who could push or pull metals were uncommon, and full mistborn were even more so. Many lords thought it impractical to leave one's soldiers and guards relatively defenseless in order to counter such a small segment of the population. No, most high noblemen relied on other means to deal with allomancers. Kelsier smiled. Doxson had said that Lord Venture kept a squad of haze killers. If that was true, Kelsier would probably meet them before the night was through. He ignored the soldiers for the moment, instead focusing on a solid line of blue pointing toward the keep's lofty top. It likely had bronze or copper sheeting on the roof. Kelsier flared his iron, took a deep breath, and pulled on the line. With a sudden jerk, he was yanked into the air. Kelsier continued to burn iron, pulling himself toward the keep at a tremendous speed. Some rumors claimed that Mistborn could fly, but that was a wistful exaggeration. Pulling and pushing against metals usually felt less like flying than it did like falling, only in the wrong direction. An allomancer had to pull hard in order to get the proper momentum, and this sent him hurtling toward his anchor at daunting speeds. Kelsier shot toward the keep, mists curling around him. He easily cleared the protective wall surrounding the keep's grounds, but his body dropped slightly toward the ground as he moved. It was his pesky weight again. It tugged him down. Even the swiftest of arrows angled slightly toward the ground as it flew. The drag of his weight meant that instead of shooting right up to the roof, he swung in an arc. He approached the keep wall several dozen feet below the rooftop, still traveling at a terrible speed. Taking a deep breath, Kelsier burned pewter, using it to enhance his physical strength much in the same way that tin enhanced his senses. He turned himself in the air, hitting the stone wall feet first. Even his strengthened muscles protested at the treatment, but he stopped without breaking any bones. He immediately released his hold on the roof, dropping a coin and pushing against it even as he began to fall. He reached out, selecting a source of metal above him, one of the wire housings of a stained glass window, and pulled on it. The coin hit the ground below and was suddenly able to support his weight. Kelsier launched himself upward, pushing on the coin and pulling on the window at the same time. Then, extinguishing both metals, he let momentum carry him the last few feet up through the dark mists. Cloak flapping quietly, he crested the lip of the keep's upper service walkway, flipped himself over the stone railing, and landed quietly on the ledge. A startled guard stood not 3 paces away. Kelsier was upon the man in a second, jumping into the air, pulling slightly on the guard's steel breastplate, and throwing the man off balance. Kelsier whipped out one of his glass daggers, allowing the strength of his iron pull to bring him toward the guard. He landed with both feet against the man's chest, then crouched and sliced with a pewter-enhanced swing. The guard collapsed with a slit throat. Kelsier landed lithely beside him, ears straining in the night, listening for sounds of alarm. There were none. Kelsier left the guard to his gurgling demise. The man was likely a lesser nobleman. The enemy. If he were instead a Ska soldier, enticed into betraying his people in exchange for a few coins, well then Kelsier was even happier to send such men into their eternity. He pushed off the dying man's breastplate, hopping off the stone service walkway and onto the rooftop itself. The bronze roof was chill and slick beneath his feet.